The Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell just got bigger. Featuring former defensive star and three-time national champion at Nebraska and NFL player Jason Peter. Jason Peter under the helmet. With Jason Peter on the Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell.
It is a very big weekend in college football, especially when you talk about the SEC. Number one LSU ready for their showdown Saturday night in Tuscaloosa with Alabama. And we are so delighted to welcome in the guy that can and always does provide the best insight and all the keys to the game. Of course, he's played in the biggest games, won three national championships. That's the Husker great Jason Peter with our Under the Helmet segment. And Jason, let me just lead off by saying you got two great teams, one big game. What intrigues you the most about this particular matchup?
Well, it's the game of the century. That's what they're pitching. And Nebraska fans certainly are familiar with that from the game back in the 70 or 71 season, Nebraska-Oklahoma,
right.
1-2. And it's a shame that it comes at this point in the year. This is the type of game that you hope for nowadays in a BCS national championship game, and you just may get it. It might be so good of a game that if there's not another undefeated team there at the end to pit against the winner, maybe they do end up doing a rematch here. But the thing that I love about this game is just it's going to be physical. It's going to be one of the most physical games that I think that people will probably have seen in the last few years. And I hate to be one of those guys that hypes it up so much. But, you know, just you got to look at, I think, what these two teams have been about over the last 5-6 years. And it's playing great defense and being physical. And I don't know if there are two better defenses in the country. I mean, what Alabama and LSU have, it's a list of future first-round draft picks on the defensive side of the ball. So I really cannot wait to watch this game. I'm definitely going to have it DVR'd, and I may watch it a second time if it's that good. But I don't know who's going to pull it out in the end. I think Alabama's chances, just being at home, having that solid run game. Not that LSU can't run the football, but I just like what they have in Trent Richardson and that offensive line. But don't kid yourself. This thing's going to come down to which team plays defense the best. I just think that there's a few more distractions that still could arise for LSU on game day when it comes from the offensive side with the quarterback situation.
Well, Jason, I know you'll agree with me. What makes it so cool about these two particular teams is they're the complete package. I mean, there is no weakness. We're going to see fundamental football. And as you're talking about, they're going to, you know, be physical. They're going to play sound defensively. And there's so many similarities between both of these teams.
And they both have depth. I mean, you can go 2-3 deep on their depth charts. I mean, that's why these schools have been so successful over the years. It's not just a matter of putting out a great roster or a great starting lineup for 1 year, and then it takes you another 3 or 4 years to finally get back to that point. I mean, they've done their job recruiting. They've gotten the guys that they want in their program, and they've coached them up. They've coached them up to a point where if the first guy goes down, the second guy is competing at that same level, and he may even be better than the guy in front of him. But, both tremendously coached football teams, well-disciplined. When you look at Saban and his history and Les Miles and his, it's hard to say I favor this guy over the other one. I mean, really in every aspect of the game, it could basically come down to a flip of the coin.
And certainly there is a lot on the line, as you were talking about, so much hype in this game between LSU and Alabama, one of the most anticipated regular season games that I've certainly seen in many years. Both desperately want to be in that BCS title game to fulfill the dream for playing a national championship. My question to you is, Jason, you understand this. You've been a part of three national championships at the University of Nebraska. How, as a player, do you keep your cool? Do you stay focused and you don't buy into all of the hype? I mean, what kind of things did Coach Osborne talk to you guys about so that you were cool, calm, and collected?
You can't get caught up in the show. And basically, I mean, all of the hype surrounding the game ultimately comes down to the same thing that you faced the previous week and the week before that. It's about the game itself. And once that first ball is kicked down the field, all of the other stuff kind of just goes out the window. And you can't get caught up in the magnitude of the game, because when the game actually becomes bigger than what it is, that's when I think you can find yourself in trouble. And I think that's when you look at LSU, and I mentioned the quarterback situation, and they have two good ones with Jarrett Lee and Jordan Jefferson. You know, Jordan Jefferson's come out, and he's kind of made it public that he feels he should have his job back, and he should be the starting quarterback now. To me, it's kind of a recipe for disaster, or it could be something where he ends up playing so well that people are then talking about him for the Heisman Trophy, which you'd have to play pretty darn well for a guy who was suspended for the beginning of the year. But he's in a situation where he realizes that every set of eyes, every college football fan in America is going to have this game tuned in. So sometimes when you're 18, 19, 20 years old, you're thinking, now's my time. I got to go out and I got to do more than what's in the game plan for me. And when you start to force things, that's when you're going to start to get yourself into trouble and the rest of your team. So it really kind of depends on how well Les Miles is able to handle that two-headed monster with both of those quarterbacks. I think he's done a good job in the last few games, but this is going to be a game where Jordan Jefferson wants to be out there 99% of the time. I think there's always that little bit of it's about me when you're talking about 18, 19, 20-year-olds, that they want to be the star. They want to be the guy who Aaron Andrews is interviewing after the game. They want to be the guy that people are talking about on the sports shows come Monday morning. So it will, I think, depend on how well he can balance that and how he can go out and do what Les Miles is asking him to do.
Well, and I have all the confidence that he will be able to do that, because his ability to run gives the Tigers the element that, you know, Jarrett Lee does not have. Now, my question to you is, one of the things that LSU has done so well this year is that they take care of the ball. They haven't committed a turnover in 5 games, and that obviously is going to be huge.
Well, that's what great teams do. They don't turn the ball over. They don't give their opponent any extra opportunities than what they already have coming to them. They take care of the football and they strip the football. This is on defensive goals for the week in every defensive meeting room across the country. It's probably the number two thing on the goal list. Number one is stop the run, and number two is force turnovers. And on the offensive side, the number one thing is taking care of the football. Don't turn the football over. So that will be a huge part of the football game. Usually the team that wins the turnover battle has a pretty good chance of winning the football game. Not too many times will you see a team turn the ball over 2, 3, 4 times in a game and still be able to win that game, especially when you have somebody like an LSU or Alabama on the other side of the football field.
We're talking about two of the great teams in college football, LSU and Alabama, and I've been listening to some of the commentary, and some folks say, well, LSU, Alabama, they really haven't played anybody when you look up and down their schedule. Do you agree with that, Jason?
Oh, LSU, I think LSU is every week, for the most part, they've had a game. I mean, they, I think, have had some challenges, and a few of them being on the road or in a so-called neutral site. I think that LSU, if there's one thing that that you can't knock LSU for. It's their schedule. I think, and look, when you're talking about the SEC, hands down, it's the best conference in college football. It's tough, I think, from top to bottom. I know some people are maybe criticizing it a little bit this year, but every once in a while, I think there'll be a down year here and there. But I still think, as a whole, the level of competition in that conference is second to none.
And you talk about competition. Of course, Alabama and LSU both feature Heisman hopefuls. Alabama with their running back in Trent Richardson. And LSU, they got a defensive guy that you really like, don't you, Jay?
Yeah, Tyrann Mathieu. He's a guy who he just has a way for making plays. There are some guys that you play with over the years where they're technically sound and they know the defense inside and out, but for some reason on game day they might not be able to find themselves in the right position and they don't make those big plays. And then there's other guys that sometimes they're not as familiar with the playbook, but for some reason they just have a way of getting from point A to point B faster than anybody you've seen before out on a football field. And Mathieu's one of those guys where he just is a ball hawk, and he knows as soon as that play on offense is set in motion, he knows exactly how to get to where he's going to make the play as fast as possible. And he's a guy, I mean, to go back to what we were talking about with turnovers, he's a guy that doesn't just tackle the football. He's constantly trying to strip the football when he's making the tackle. And that's something that in a way, you can't coach. I mean, coaches try to do it during the week, but some guys, you just either have it or you don't. There was a guy that I played with in the 90s. His name was Terrell Farley. And he was a junior college transfer, and this was the same type of kid where if you asked him to line up in 90% of the defenses, he'd probably get half of them wrong. And but when you put him out on the field on game day, whether it was asking him to block kicks or make a big play against the pass game, I mean, he constantly made big plays. Some guys just find themselves in the right position at the right time. And I'm not saying it's luck. I'm saying there's got to be some sort of football sense that runs through their blood that makes them get to where they need to be in order to make a play like that.
You're listening to the voice of Jason Peter with our weekly Under the Helmet segment. You can check out all of Jason's stuff at jasonpeter.com. We're all anticipating and looking forward to the number one team of the country, LSU, headed into Alabama. It's a big-time showdown in Tuscaloosa. And Jason, you are, many of our listeners know this, you are a Heisman voter. We want you to weigh in on that. We were just highlighting a couple of the players from Alabama and LSU. But at the forefront really has been Andrew Luck. We've even been hearing people debate. I'm not sure if you heard this on ESPN, that you know, that the Colts should trade Peyton Manning and bring on Andrew Luck. What do you think about all that?
Well, I think if Bill Belichick was the coach of the Patriots, I wouldn't put it past him. I think he has shown over the years he's not scared to trade away a huge piece of his puzzle. He realizes that at some point, these guys aren't going to play at the same level. And I think it's somewhat of a guessing game at, you know, taking a shot at when you think this guy, his skill set is going to diminish, and you got to combine that with timing of when you can still get the most value for a guy. Andrew Luck is he's a guy who he's going to play, I think, as long as his health is intact for a long time on Sundays. And he's a smart kid, and I think 99% of the time when you look at NFL teams, there's usually a guy who's running the show at the quarterback position that's probably pretty intelligent. These playbooks that NFL offenses are given, and don't kid yourself, the NFL, it's a quarterback-driven league. I mean, you've seen the way that the rules have been changed in order to protect the quarterbacks, because they know that in order for the entire business of the NFL to function at the highest level, you need the biggest stars at that quarterback position. So they do what they can to protect him. As a defensive guy, obviously, I'm not for all those changes. Feels like you can't even hit these guys anymore. But Andrew Luck, he's done nothing to, I guess, second guess whether or not he would be successful. I don't think he played the greatest game of his life against USC, but when they needed him to take the offense down the field, he was there, and he did it, and he succeeded, and you look at overtimes, and he's able to do that. I mean, he just keeps his cool, and he's a leader out there. I think, you know, for him to come back, certainly had the opportunity, I think, to be the number one pick in the draft last year and turned it down. I think he's a smart kid. He realizes this is the time of my life right now, playing college football. You know, guys that worry about injury, usually those are the guys that tend to get injured. I think he realized that, look, I'm just going to go out. I'm going to compete. I'm going to train my butt. I'm going to get myself in shape. I'm going to, you know, there aren't days where I take practices off and I don't take games off. And the guys like that, they tend to not get injured. And I think he realized that about himself, that he's not one of those guys that just goes through the motions. And he's done nothing but impress, I think. And I'm certainly not the only one, I think, who looks at this kid. I think there's a lot of NFL teams that are looking at their seasons right now and thinking, how can we get Andrew Luck on our roster next year?
High expectations for Andrew Luck. A lot of praise from our Jason Peter, as you're talking about him being the Heisman hopeful. I'm assuming, is this the guy at this point that you are leaning to voting for?
Right now, I think he's certainly the front runner. Now, obviously, a lot of stuff can change. I like the running back from Alabama, Trent Richardson. I think he's just a workhorse, and he's certainly the guy that Saban builds that offense around. You give him five good offensive linemen, and this kid, he's not just a guy who, I don't know the best way of putting it, is just satisfied with kind of the hype that has been given to him. I mean, he fights for every inch, every yard. He's a guy who constantly wants more out of every single play and is pushing himself. And I think those are the things that you like to see, because nowadays, let's face it, I mean, with how many media outlets there are, and everybody who's got a keyboard in front of them pretty much can write an article, and it would be easy for a kid to get sucked into what everybody is saying about him. The only thing that I don't know him personally, I don't know how he is walking around campus. All I judge him on is how he plays football games. And to me, it still seems like the way that he plays is like he thinks in his head he hasn't got any respect at all from around the league or from around writers and from other coaches. He to me, looks like a guy who feels like he's got to go out and prove himself every single play and run hard every single play. And that's what's shown, I think, on film. The eye in the sky doesn't lie, and he is a guy that I think he'll certainly be in New York. And he's not to say Andrew Luck is so far ahead of him that Trent Richardson doesn't have a shot at something, but he certainly has the platform, I think, to have Heisman voters say, you know, don't just write this thing off just yet. If he goes out and succeeds against LSU and has a big, big game, he's right in the mix.
He plays hungry. He plays with a sense of urgency. You're spot on. I'm curious, you know, do you take time as a Heisman voter to kind of reflect and see how they do when it comes to the NFL? Because Cam Newton, we look at Andy Dalton. Perhaps, I mean, do you vacillate a little bit and should have been like, man, I should have voted perhaps for him? Who would have known that he would have had such, I mean, he is off to such a hot start in the NFL.
Yeah, it's hard to predict. You just never know how guys are going to translate their skill set from college to the NFL, especially at the quarterback position. It's probably the most difficult position, I think, to transition from college to the NFL. There's just so much more that's happening within the offense as well as on the other side of the football, being able to read defenses, and that's something that you just can't go out and say, I'm just a better athlete. And even with Cam Newton, with the success that he's had, and part of me thought, well, this kid, he's just dominated college football because he's so much of a better athlete than 90% of the guys on the field. And it's going to be difficult for him because maybe he relies too much on his athleticism than he does actually running the offense the way it should be. And he shocked me. I mean, you don't have, and not to say he's had a tremendous amount of success, but he's had a good amount of success. He's thrown for over 300 yards, I believe, four or five times. And you just don't do that by luck. I mean, he's done his homework. He's studied his playbook, and he's impressed me.
The great Jason Peter has been with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. We got about 60 seconds or so. Did those black shirts, have they been handed out yet? I thought you guys did a very nice job against Michigan State. Season low, 187 yards defensively. That's what you guys held Michigan State to.
Yeah, it was a good game. It really was. Nebraska played well, and I think not to take anything away from the Huskers or the black shirts, but I think Michigan State struggled game plan wise. It seemed like they didn't want to run the football. That's where Nebraska is the weakest, is run defense in between the tackles. And Michigan State started off with some success running the ball, and it just seemed that they got away from it, and they wanted to put the game plan on the shoulder of Kirk Cousins. And you know, it was a fairly windy day. Most of the scoring was done with the wind at their backs, and Michigan State just struggled. And I think they got away from what they wanted to do. But Nebraska was able to step up, and I don't think anybody saw a game like that being played. 3 points from a team that just put quite a bit of points up on Wisconsin, and they were coming off a nice three-game win streak against some Big Ten opponents, and that was what a lot of people were talking about and were concerned whether or not they could keep that high, that emotional high, and being able to come into Lincoln and play. But the black shirts ended up being handed out, and that's a whole nother argument because Bo handed out 20 of them, and that's a little bit more than what people are used to being handed out. You know, when I played, usually it was a starting defense that got them. Sometimes it was only 8 or 9 guys. There had been times when I was at practice and there might only been 4 or 5 because Charlie McBride had ripped 4 or 5 off of guys. And it was disappointing for me, to say the least, that he handed out 20, because there are guys that got black shirts that I don't even want to say, not because they weren't starters, but they just weren't even significant contributors. They were guys that maybe came in occasionally on third down over the last game or two that got black shirts. And I think if that's the way that he's going to do it, I think when you talk about 20, 30 years from now, when people say, yeah, I was a black shirt, well, if you're handing 20, 25 of them out each year, I think you just water it down. You know, there have been a lot of guys that have played on this Nebraska defense this year, but it's not because they have a squad like an LSU or an Alabama where you have quality players in your 2 and 3 deep where you just have to get them on the field. There have been a lot of guys that have played for Nebraska this year because the guy in front of them hasn't gotten the job done. But Bo's going to run it the way that he wants to run it. I just think it's disappointing. I feel somewhat sad for the guys that really did earn the black shirts, because now you got guys that are just getting in on mop-up duty that are wearing black shirts. It doesn't remain that coveted possession for guys on defense. The black shirts is one of Nebraska's greatest football traditions, but for a former black shirt, it was somewhat surprising, to say the least, when he handed out 20.
Well, Jason, you're right. I mean, it is a long-standing tradition. What began back in the 60s, And so it is something that I know that you take very, very serious. Listen, Nat, we are flat out of time. There's so many more questions I want to ask you because we're talking about the Huskers right now only having one loss on this season, you know, but there's a lot of unknowns still about this team. How good are they? And we will definitely delve into that next week. So, Jason, thanks so much. Stay warm up there in Nebraska, and we'll talk to you again real soon.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. We're going to step aside. Much more straight ahead here in just a moment.